You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 37 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the Derby victory over City as the title race is blown wide open. Bea Cantona is next up on the Cap Countdown, and a Tottenham fan joins us on the line to preview this weekend's encounter.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to episode 37 of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's me, Stephen Darwin, and I'm joined by Dan and Dov. Guys, how are you doing this week? Hopefully very much elated after the Man City victory.
Well, it was fantastic, wasn't it? I mean, couldn't have been a better weekend for United, and I think it was brilliant, really. I'm over the moon, I think, now that we're going to win the league, so I'm very buoyant.
Great stuff. Dov, how are you doing this week?
I'm not bad. You can tell Dan's in a good mood. He's got that nice voice, you know. But it, like, most of the time he's always a bit depressed and down, but you can tell he's a bit bouncy this week. But yeah, with me, I'm good, Steve. I had a great weekend. The footballing weekend was marvellous, obviously. United, Tottenham, a great Rome derby as well. I couldn't really ask for much more.
Great stuff. Well then, we'll start, guys, by reviewing the terrific win over Manchester City at Eastlands. Dan, well, we've said most of it already, but it was a fantastic result to be able to complete the league double over City, and of course with Chelsea losing to Tottenham, and a lesser extent Arsenal slipping up as well, because they're definitely completely out of it now. So it really has been a completely positive weekend, hasn't it?
Yeah, like I said, it's been absolutely fantastic, really. You couldn't really ask for anything better after we beat City. For Chelsea to slip up as well was just the icing on the cake, really. But getting back to the City game, it weren't the best performance, you know, by a United team I've ever seen. But, you know, we kept on going till the end. And you know, we got that vital goal through Paul Scholes. So there's nothing better, really, than a last-minute goal. You know that the other team's not going to be able to counter you and come back at it, but, you know, it's fantastic. It's just a shame we couldn't do that against Blackburn, you know, the week previous to that.
And, Dov, the defensive performance as well. I mean, considering City had scored so many goals in the last couple of games, and it's six or five, Johnny Evans coming in for Rio, and Vidic as well was spectacular, wasn't he? He made a couple of really, really important blocks towards the end. And, yeah, I just think the centre-backs in particular should be singled out for special praise, really.
I think so. I think you say, like what you said with Vidic, he was fantastic. Really kept Tevez and Adebayor quiet. I think the block was from Onahua. He blocked that shot. It was a great performance for him. And John Evans, obviously, coming well. He's not played too much recently. Came in and looked extremely comfortable at the back. And I think credit needs to go to the whole defence. Obviously, when you've got Bellamy as well on the left, I think he was probably the most dangerous attacking player maybe for City as well, going on against Gary Neville. But I mean, Neville used all the experience he's got and managed to keep him at bay as well. And then Patrice Evra on the left. We spoke about Adam Johnson last week, about how he's sort of the new up-and-coming star of City's side. And, well, Patrice Evra put him rightfully in his place and really just didn't give him a hope in hell of getting past them at all. It was a great performance by the back line, a foundation in which we went on to win. Although, I've got to say, I thought the game was a bit dire, to be honest. It wasn't really the best game to watch, but the outcome at the end was all I could hope for, really.
No, it didn't quite live up to the spectacular billing it had got before, did it? But like you say, we got the points, and just with Evra as well, we got the cross as well for the Scholes goal. So it's good to see him coming back into a bit of form. And Dan, for once, really, Wayne Rooney didn't steal the show.
No, I don't think he's fully fit, to be honest with you. I don't think I expected him to steal the show. I mean, he had that one chance towards the end of the first half, didn't he, which he dragged wide when he could have probably played Giggs in. But, you know, forgive him for shooting, he's going to have his pop there. But, I mean, I think that overall the team played really well. I mean, we were quite solid. and Rooney was an outlet when we needed him to be. But I think everyone had a decent game, and I'm glad to see Paul Scholes, you know, grabbing the winner, especially, you know, 93rd minute for someone of Paul Scholes' age. And, you know, we've said it in the past regarding, you know, his age and how long he can carry on for, but I mean, 93rd minute to get from one end of the pitch to the other, get it under the end of a cross, it's fantastic, really. And I think Gary Neville came out and said it's all about desire. And he rightfully gave him a big snog on the lips,
which I saying to desire.
I thought Paul Scholes went for it as well. That's the surprising thing. Paul Scholes actually went in for it, didn't he? So he must have known what was coming. I don't know whether it's anything behind the scenes to be looking at, but.
Dan, if you ever play football, don't get any ideas, all right? That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I can imagine, though, in the heat of the moment, anything like that, you know, against City, he might have just motions carried over.
Yeah, to be fair, like you know, just talking about scores as well, I know we've sort of, well, yeah, I don't think he's up for it for all the sort of top class games against the top class teams, but City gave him the space that he needs and loves. And I think at his age as well, if you give him space, it will punish it. And he really controlled the game as well. I thought everything sort of good that we done really went through him. He was the heart of everything. He was great.
He made a cracking tackle as well on the touchline, didn't he? I couldn't believe it. Paul Scholes. He won the ball. He took the man. Everything. He just got up and bounced up. It was brilliant.
No card either. It was great.
Oh no! Yeah, no card. Because he just came out of shot, didn't he? And just smashed into him. Brilliant. Really.
I think that was Adam Johnson as well. He just wasn't getting any joy at all.
And I mean, you mentioned a few of the veterans there, guys. I mean. Last week we sort of questioned it, didn't we? Giggs and Scholes starting in the middle together against Blackburn. I mean, is that really what it is? Is that why it went so wrong? Because they all started again, Gary Neville, Ryan Giggs and Paul Scholes all started. I mean, is that literally because Giggs was moved out wide, we had Fletcher and Gibson in the middle? Is that what made the difference?
Well, I think, like you said, I was a bit worried, to be fair, when I seen all the veterans playing again, because of every team I've seen it this season, it's not really worked. And I didn't think Giggs had the best of games. I think he was, maybe a bit of a frustrated figure at times. And really, his sort of attacking play and sort of through balls and trying to make this defensive play passes wasn't really coming off for him. And then, obviously, it got pushed out wide. And I think maybe it sort of helped us a little bit, but I'm of the opinion that you can't play the three of them and you can't play Scholes and Giggs in the middle of the park in the same game. Yeah, I just think they are a bit too old and they've not got the legs for it. But like I say, Scholes had a great game, Giggs didn't. I mean, you'll probably get a game, say, against Tottenham at the weekend where Giggs will have a fantastic game and Scholes will be under the weather. But I've got to give credit. I'm just going to give credit to Scholes, but I do think Giggs wasn't really up to too much.
I thought Gary Neville did really well, obviously, against Bellamy, who's probably, you know, one of the quickest players in the league. And he didn't really show. There was a few times when he breezed past him, but nothing really to threaten us too much. I think that's all down to Gary Neville's experience. I'm not Gary Neville's biggest fan at the moment. I think he is obviously coming to the end of his playing career, which is fine. But I mean, he had a great game on Saturday, and you can't really dismiss him.
No, I think you're racing that, Dan, definitely. I think that you're not going to get consistent performances like that out of the sort of veteran guys, which is maybe one of the worries. It's all good maybe getting it once every maybe three or four games, but they can't do it week in, week out, which is a worry.
Right then, guys. Well, before we move on, we'll have a quick look at the fixtures then. Dan, 1 point behind Chelsea. We've still got to play Tottenham, of course, on Saturday. Then we've got Sunderland away and Stoke at home, whereas Chelsea have got Stoke at home. And then the big one, Liverpool away, and then they finish against Wigan. So basically, we could be asking Rafa Benitez and Liverpool to do us a bit of a favour.
Yeah, we could. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people come out today and said that they'd rather see Chelsea win 5-0 than handles the title, which I think's a bit disgraceful, really. You never want your team to lose, but I can understand exactly why they want to do it. 19th title, 4 in a row, and all that lot. It'd just kill their season well and truly, wouldn't it? but I mean, I don't know. I mean, when Blackburn won the title, they beat Blackburn at Anfield, and it was due to our own misgivings that we didn't beat West Ham to win the league. So I mean, it's happened before, and they've gone out and won the game. So I'm not really too worried about that. I don't think the players will want to go out to lose a game, especially with the win bonuses as high as what they are these days. So
surely you can't go out and send a reserve team out, because you saw what happened with Wolves. He got fined. He got in trouble for it. So.
There's no way he could do that. That'd be totally obvious as well. But also, you know, I mean, who's to say that someone like Jamie Carragher, you know, Liverpool through and through, so he says, and all this lot, doesn't like just, you know, misdirect a header into the top corner or something. You know, I can just see it right now. I can just see it.
Well, even that, like Jamie Carragher and Steven Gerrard might just have a little word with their teammates and just say, right, we're not going to win this game, so make it look like you've tried. But even then, put it on another foot. Say we were us and Liverpool would swap positions. Would you take a defeat off Chelsea to stop Liverpool winning the league?
I don't know. I think as a fan, you could get away with saying yes, but as if you're a player, I don't think you wouldn't want to do that, would you? Why would you want to lose a game when you're playing for the club that you know pays your wages? You can't go out there and lose.
It is a really interesting though to see what, like you say, Dan, like the likes of Carragher and Dov. You mentioned Gerrard. I mean, it's going to be a really interesting game to watch, isn't it? Just to see how they react, what sort of mood they're in, how they perform. I mean, if they're still in the Europa League, then they might also think, well, do we really want to conserve too much energy, put too much into this and potentially be tired for the final? Or the other way around, if they're out of that, there's completely nothing to play for at all. So it's just going to be really intriguing to watch. But
you can imagine John Terry, can't you, bringing down someone like, I don't know, David Ngog in the air in the 80th minute. Gerrard has a penalty and he just, you know, seal it. What would he do in that situation? I don't know. As a player, I don't actually know what I'd do. I'd be like, I don't know.
I was going to say, Dan, you mentioned as well at the start that you think we're going to go on and win it now. Do you honestly think we've got the momentum and things like that?
I actually think, and this might sound ridiculous, that I don't think it'll come down to the Liverpool game, because I think we'll win our remaining three games with 9 points, which would that take us to 85. And then I think, I actually think Stoke will get something against Chelsea at the weekend. John Terry's suspended, of course, for being an idiot and getting himself sent off, basically. So, who knows? Who knows? I don't know. They're not the same team with Alex and Carvalho of what they are with Terry and Carvalho and everything else. So I think that hopefully Rory Delap will get his long throws out, you know, they'll just bomb the area. I'd love it, and I think Cech's not the same keeper as what he was 2-3 years ago, so hopefully they can grab a few points off him. I'd be delighted.
I'm in agreement with you. I think there'll be a lot more than just the Liverpool game I'll come down to.
The thing with Chelsea is, I mean, they were poor against Bolton last Tuesday, and obviously they lost at the weekend, so they're not in great form themselves, are they? They didn't even look like troubling Spurs much on Saturday either, from what I saw of the game. And Spurs could have been 5 or 6 up, I think.
Yeah.
Which would have been fantastic for our goal defence if they could manage to do that.
That's the thing I was thinking that as well. It could even come down to goal difference. I think, was it, they're 3 points ahead of us? Three goals ahead of us now, something like that. It's got to be, I think it's the tightest title race I can remember.
Well, it's great to watch, and it's great to be part of if you're a player, and obviously as a fan, it's great to be going into these games knowing that you've got to win, because it just makes it that little bit better, doesn't it?
Well,
hopefully we'll cruise through it. But you know, I still think there's another twist somewhere. Spurs are in great form, so they could pose problems for United at Old Trafford on the weekend. So I don't know, really. It's not over yet, is it? And nobody's decided. So it's just see what happens.
Yeah, what about you, Steve? Where do you think it's going to? Do you think there's going to be twists at Liverpool, or do you think there's going to be a lot more than just that coming down in that one game?
Well, on paper, I think you're looking at it being the Liverpool game as being the big decider. I think they'll beat Stoke, Chelsea on the weekend, even though Tony Pulis and his side, I mean, they're a decent team, aren't they? And they won't lie down for them, but I still think they'll pick up the win. And then we got Tottenham, like Dan said, really difficult game. They're in form, but we should still come through. So I think whatever happens in the Liverpool game could really decide where the title goes. But it's like I said, it's going to be really, really interesting to watch, and we'll see what happens and see how it all unfolds. But we'll move on to our player and cabbage of the week then this week. So, player of the week, Dov, really, really good week. So, must be plenty of choices for you.
Yeah, well, Paul Scholes is an obvious choice. I'm not going to give it to him. I'm going to actually give it to Evra. I thought he really just took any sting out of Johnson's attacks. He played great at the back, was fantastic going forward, and set up Scholes' goal. So he's going to get it for me, and I think he's been a consistent performer most of the season as well, so it's a deserved player of the week and an overdue one, I think.
Dan?
I'm going to have to go with Paul Scholes. I think that his performance, actually, in the game in general was brilliant. I mean, he did control the pace of the game. I know it wasn't a particularly fast game, which, you know, obviously suited him. His passing was top of the range. I think I read the paper today, he had 87% pass completion rate. And that header, it's just trademark Paul Scholes, really, the way he just glanced it in the corner. The power he got into it as well from... It weren't a particularly, you know, powerful cross, was it, from Evra? And the way that he just guided it was...
It was
nothing short of magical, really. So
it was a great leap, Dan, as well. It was like a volcano erupting, would you say?
Possibly. That's an awful pun, though, Dov, to be honest with you. But
give me a better pun than that, Dan. Come on.
No, I think that you're bringing the podcast into a bit of, you know, a bit of a joke there, Dov, with that one. I don't think that was very good.
Oh, I'm trying my best.
I mean, there's many more you could have come up with.
What about opening the city defence up like lava running through snow?
That's even worse. You can't be serious.
What about you, Steve? I'll move on quickly. Who's your player of the week?
Player of the week? I thought you were going to ask me for a pun. Player of the week. It's got to be Vidic for me. Scholes and Evra are my other two in my mind, but no, Vidic. I thought he was superb. He usually doesn't perform, does he? Unless Rio's around him, but. No, with Evans in there, I thought they both did terrifically well. And the blocks at the end, I think it was Neda Manua, wasn't it, who was about to stick it in, and he got his body on the line, as he always does, Vidic. And in the air as well, he's typically commanding in the air. So, yeah, he gets my vote. What about Cabbage of the week, other than Dov for his puns? Dan, I'll start with you.
I don't know, really. I think of the players that started, I think, Giggs was poor, but I also think Gibson could have got it, but I'm going to give it Giggs. He's been there before, he knows what's expected, and I don't think he played particularly well, so I'm going to give it to Ryan Giggs, unfortunately. Dov?
I'm going to give it to Gibbo. I just think he didn't really get into the game very much, and his first touch was pretty horrendous for a lot of the game, and then obviously he got taken off for Nani as well, so he's my Cabbage of the Week. What about you, Steve?
Let's give out a controversial one. Wayne Rooney, Cabbage of the Week this week. Probably the first time and only time he'll ever get it. But no, probably a lot of it is due to the injury that he's had over the last few weeks. He's obviously not fully fit and he's not up to complete match sharpness. But a couple of chances you'd have expected him to have put away. But he wasn't horrendously bad. It's just wasn't the normal spectacular Wayne Rooney performance.
I thought he led the line fairly well, to be fair. He's a long striker, and I think he held it up well, and he ran the channels well. I mean, I remember Company miskicking that one, and he kind of like didn't really know what to do with it when he could have squared it, or he could have shot himself. But I mean, yeah, he's not fit, is he? But yeah, it's an understandable decision, Steve.
It's a bit harsh, like I say, but from the spectacular stuff we expect from Rooney, that's the only reason I'm going to give it to him. And there wasn't amazingly bad performances anywhere, was there, really? Everyone put in a steady shift. Like you say, Gibson and Giggs were probably the two that stood out most as underperforming. But
Dan, I've got another pun for you. I just thought of it.
All right.
What about Paul Scholes? Did it take notice of the ban over UK airspace because of the volcano? And it rose to put in a magnificent header. What do you think about that? That's not really good either, is it?
Not really.
Bit of a mouthful, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really, but it's not something to go on the Sun, is it? Something like, you know, on the front page, but...
Right, I'll keep thinking and I'll think of a good one for the end of the show.
It's a good effort.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Right then, Dov, kick us off with under-18s review then. I know the reserves didn't play, but I believe it was a decent result for the youngsters.
That is right, Steve. The reserves were in action this week. They are playing at the weekend, I believe, but the under-18s, they were playing Middlesbrough away. And, well, they've got a magnificent 4-1 victory. They did trail after 7 minutes. Cameron Park, he fired home a stunning strike that just went off inside of the post to put Borough 1 up.
Is that Jason Park's brother?
I don't know. Well, Cameron Park? Do you think maybe it could be his like adopted son or something? Dan, I don't know. But no, I don't think so, Dan. No. That was a rubbish joke. You could do better than that as well. but anyway, back to the under-18s. Nicky Ajosi, though, he got United level. He finished after getting one-on-one with the goalkeeper. And then that was on the 30th minute after, obviously, we were behind early after 7 minutes. Tom Thorpe, he tapped in from close range from a corner. And then 5 minutes after half-time, Ravel Morrison got one goal and then got another goal quickly after. The conditions there were quite windy, but wait, you ready for this one? United, we blew the hosts away. Yeah, that was good. Yeah. basically, after we got the first goal, it was pretty much plain sailing. A job well done, and obviously priceless points to hold off the challenges from both Everton and West Bromwich at the top of the under at the 18 Academy league table. So, I mean, it was a good game. Difficult start, obviously, for the boys, but Nicky Adjose and Ravel Morrison as well, getting some good goals. So, a 4-1 victory away from home is a good result.
Next up on the CAF countdown, we have B. Cantona, as he's known on the forum. How are you?
I'm good, cheers, mate.
Good. Obviously, a brilliant weekend for United. It was beating City and Spurs turning Chelsea over, Terry getting sent off. How confident are you, about lifting the title?
It was a cracking weekend. That's one of the best weekends I've had for a while, that. And I said a few before the last game, if we win our last four games, I always fancied us to win the title still. So I don't know now with this Torres news, though. Throws everything back up in the air because Liverpool are pretty crap without him.
I mean, the thing is, would they let us win the title anyway? I mean, I can see him letting Chelsea beat him at Anfield just so we don't win the league. But I would seriously hope that wouldn't happen.
That's what all I've been talking about today is like, well, what would happen if it was the other way around and stuff. And
well, hopefully they've got a bit of pride about them and they'll want to win their own games. They want to finish fourth anyway, but or at least fifth anyway. So hopefully
they've never been proud.
No, well, not when they've not won a Premier League trophy anyway. So never mind. Anyway, right, we'll crack on with it. Fergal and Decorative Ed have got 8 on top of the table. Are you confident that you can, get a 9?
Nah, I won't be troubling them. But as long as I get one right, I'm happy.
Yeah, you never know. It's easy what the questions, throw for you. So we'll give it a go. Your clock starts now. Which club did Peter Schmeichel join after leaving United?
Lisbon.
In which year was Dennis Law voted European Footballer of the Year?
67.
Brian McClair had a nickname. What was it?
Chocky.
Who scored United's last Premier League goal?
Last Premier League goal? Scholes.
Who was Nicky Butt sent off against for the first time for United in 1996?
Newcastle.
Who skippered United to the title in the 51-52 season?
No idea.
Matt Busby played for both City and Liverpool. Is that true or false?
That's true.
How many goalkeepers did United use in senior matches during the 2000-2001 season?
4.
Did Eric Cantona ever score 20 league goals in a season during his time at United?
No.
Right, that's it. You got, according to my count, 1, 2, 3... But you got 5.
So I'll take that.
5 out of 9 is alright,
isn't it? Yeah, not too bad. What did I get right? What did I get wrong?
The ones you got, I'll run through them for you. Schmeichel left Lisbon, you were right with that one. Yeah. Dennis Law was European Football of the Year in 64. McClair was Chocky. Scholes, you were right there. I knew that would catch you out. Nicky Butt was sent off against West Ham in 96 at Upton Park. Okay. It was Johnny Carey who skippered United to the title. Matt Busby did play for City and Liverpool. United did use 4 goalkeepers, good guess with that one. And Cantona, he never scored 20 goals, so that's how I worked it out.
Oh, that'll do me.
Right, okay then. Well, thanks very much for joining us anyway.
Alright, no problems. Cheers, mate.
Okay, no worries.
What about your legends profile for this week then, Dov?
Well, yes, right, we have Leslie Mark Hughes, also known as Sparky. He is a Welsh international, United legend, played for clubs and great clubs in Europe and some not so great clubs in England as well. He joined United after leaving school at the age of 17 and he had to wait 3 years to make his senior debut for us. He actually came on for Norman Whiteside in a League Cup victory over Port Vale on the 26th of October 1983. On the same season, on the 7th of December, he started his first game and won one League Cup draw, against Oxford, and was an instant hero as he netted the equaliser for United. And this was obviously his first season, so getting games at Old Trafford, and he managed 4 goals and 7 appearances altogether. And well, it was, you can't really ask much more of a youngster coming in that's 20 years old. So United strike force at the time was Frank Stapleton and Norman Whiteside, and Hughes actually managed to force his way into that team, and pushed Whiteside to sort of further back, so he went to play in midfield. Season after his debut season, that was when sort of Hughes established himself, when he sort of took over from Whiteside as Stapleton's partner. He was instrumental in the FA Cup final victory over Everton, and then in his first full season he managed to grab 25 goals, which was magnificent. But the following year, after he made it into the team, being a first team player, my 70 league goals, and caught the attention of a team from Spain called Barcelona, then managed by Terry Venables. It had a Gary Lineker in their ranks as well, and well, Terry Venables wanted Hughes and Lineker as a strike partnership. So unfortunately for us, he was actually sold in the summer of 1986 for £2 million to Barcelona. The transfer had actually been agreed at the turn of the year 1986, but it wasn't actually made public till the end of the season. Although when he actually moved there, it was a bit of a disappointment. After only one season with Barcelona, he managed 4 goals in 28 games. He was then loaned out to Bayern Munich for the 87-88 season. Basically, at Bayern Munich, he regained a bit of his form. Eventually, he got 6 goals in 18 games. He obviously went back to Barcelona, and obviously didn't want to stay there. And then, we brought him back to the club in May 1988. He actually was turned. Sir Alex Ferguson was at the helm, and he brought him back for a club record fee of £1.8 million. And, all we can say is that was somewhat of a masterstroke by Sir Alex Ferguson. For the next 7 years, Hughes was just magnificent for us. In his first season back in England, Hughes picked up the PFA Player of the Year award, even though we only finished in 11th place in the First Division that season. A year later, he helped us go from strength to strength. He hit twice in the 3-3 FA Cup draw against Crystal Palace. And then obviously we went on to win the replay 1-0. Although during this time, Hughes's record, it wasn't his strike record wasn't particularly impressive or prolific. It was more noted for spectacular and really quite important goals. And then obviously this came to the fore in the final of the European Cup Winners' Cup the following season, which was against his old team Barcelona. And this was played in Rotterdam on a rainy evening, and he scored both of our goals, a 2-1 victory over Barcelona. Following year, we were pipped to the First Division title on the last day of the season by Leeds United, although we did win the League Cup. This was the first of actually one of 3 League Cups with 3 different clubs that he went on to win. At the end of the 92-93 season, Hughes had a big smile on his face because, yes, that's right, we ended a 26-year wait to win the league title as we beat Aston Villa to the, obviously, the crown there. The season after, we won the double, the league and the FA Cup. And Hughes scored in a 4-1 FA Cup final victory over Chelsea at Wembley. Following season, 94-95, this was to be Hughes' last for Manchester United, obviously, as we missed out on the league and the cup during that year. And Sir Alex Ferguson, he said that the reason he let Hughes go was to make room for the Ginger Prince, Paul Scholes. Scholes was breaking through at the team then, and this is one of the reasons that he let him go. And the club he let him go to was indeed Chelsea for £1.5 million. He had a little bit of success there. Had a good partnership with Gianfranco Zola, and he scored 39 goals in 123 appearances for Chelsea. Picked up an FA Cup, a League Cup, a Cup Winners' Cup, and had quite a decent spell there. But in July 98, he was sold on to Southampton for £650,000. This year, any goals he did score began to dry up. Only managed 2 goals in his 2-year spell there, 52 appearances he made at Southampton. He's actually moved into a bit of a midfield role by Southampton manager Dave Jones. And this really backfired a little bit for Southampton, as he actually picked up 14 yellow cards in his first season with Southampton. He then left the year 2000 to join Everton, where he played 18 games for them, only managed 1 goal before moving on to Blackburn Rovers, where he finished his club career. 2 years there, 50 games, 6 goals. And he was then given the Wales manager's job. He was appointed coach of the Welsh national team in 1999. It was only meant to be a temporary appointment alongside Neville Southall. as he plays Bobby Gould. But the results were good, and Hughes actually earned himself, but he got a long-term deal. Southall then sort of left as manager. We were going through a bad patch when he took over, but after 5 years in charge, he actually nearly got them to Euro 2004. In their qualifying group, they managed to beat Italy and were only denied a place in the finals after losing to Russia in the playoffs to get to Euro 2004. So obviously a great achievement for such a small country, and obviously great for Hughes to have on his CV as well. He then obviously quit the national team to move to Blackburn Rovers in 2004. His aim there, when first taken over, was actually to keep Blackburn away from relegation, which he did. And he also took the club to an FA Cup semi-final for the first time in 40 years. And his second season with Blackburn, finished inside the top six of the Premier League, qualifying for the FA Cup, beat Chelsea, actually beat United twice that season, and Arsenal as well. And also, and they just missed out on the League Cup final. I mean, he had quite a successful time there. In 2008, Manchester City came calling after sacking Sven-Göran Eriksson, and Hughes, he took over. His time at City was always a bit of a turbulent time, shall we say. And some would say that his record wasn't the best. And eventually, given the book favour of Roberto Mancini, and that was this season, on the 19th of December 2009, to be exact. But he had a fantastic club career, obviously winning the league twice, three FA Cups, Cup Winners' Cup with ourselves and Chelsea, and then obviously three League Cups. He won the League Cup with Blackburn Rovers as well. He's also inducted into the English Hall of Fame, and he's also an OBE, so a great player for us. I remember a couple of goals, one goal he scored, I think it was against Leeds in an FA Cup match in 1993 or 94, and it was a header that he scored, and he was like arching back, and he managed to head it back across the goals. It was a great header. I remember that. That was one of those I remember from Hughes sticking out. But yeah, he was a fantastic number 10, and another one of the great strikers that we've had at the club.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Well, everybody, it's that time of the show where we go to an opposition fan. And this week, I'm delighted to welcome James Marsh of the Tottenham Hotspur blog. How are you doing, James? Welcome to the redcafe.net podcast.
Yeah, hi.
Not a problem at all. It is a pleasure. Well, you'll be a very happy man after the weekend, won't you, James?
To be honest, I was expecting us to beat Arsenal. Chelsea, I wasn't too sure about. I thought we'd get a point. But after the week we've had, especially after the disappointment at the semi-final, I guess it was
obviously, we done you a little bit of a favour by beating City earlier on in the day, and then you returned it. I mean, I think a lot of people are giving Gareth Bale the man of the match for that. I think he's really came on in the last couple of months at least. I mean, a lot of people remember him for being pretty, well, for want of a better word, rubbish. And I think he's hadn't won a game when he was in the starting lineup. I mean, what's been the turnaround in his form, and why has he suddenly become one of your best players?
I think, to be honest with you, when you're a young player, especially coming up a division, moving to a bigger club, sometimes it is quite difficult. You've got to remember that he's only 20, and it's obvious that he's a type of player that requires a confidence. And I've been listening to an interview today with Joe Jordan, the assistant manager at Spurs, and he said basically he's just grown up a hell of a lot, not just mentally, but physically. I think that's why he's moving to come on.
What about your obviously the transfer sort of rumours surrounding him as well? I know he's been linked away in the future, in the past. Do you think you can hold on to him in the summer?
Well, with the financial problems that you lot have got, and also Liverpool, I don't think we're going anywhere north. If anywhere, maybe Chelsea at the Brown, which wants to spend some money. If he's getting to go somewhere, which I don't think so, it'll be definitely abroad, maybe to Inter. But hopefully we'll stick around with it.
And we'll talk about some players that you think might cause us some problems at the weekend. Obviously, you've got the likes of Jermaine Defoe, and Pavlyuchenko is on a good run of form. I mean, who do you think will cause us most problems come the weekend?
Well, I think, like we just talked about Bale, basically. Also, Jermaine Defoe, he's been a bit off form, but he's just come back from an injury, and the injury is the same to the hamstring. Normally takes about three or four games Brent to get back into the swing of things. This will be his third game back. So I think he might cause some problems.
Obviously, you've managed to secure that fourth place and make it your own. Do you think you can hang on to it?
Well, it's very difficult. I think Saturday's game against Europe, and also on the 5th of May when we play Manchester City up at East, I think basically what East is going to us will be the game of the week. Like, normally we've got them in our back pocket out there, but I think things are different now, so I'm not too sure. It's absolutely so difficult.
Obviously, if you make it into the Champions League, do you think you could cement your place as a new member of the Big Four or make it a Big Five sort of forevermore? Do you think it maybe be used a one good season for you?
Well, hopefully we won't do it in Everton. I think the difference between us and one of the top four is that we've got money behind us. I think obviously we are a big club, and some of us are up in the air. Also based in London, it seems to have built quite a few international players. With the World Cup coming up, if we are in the Champions League qualified, we've got to get through that in order to be in the Champions League. I do believe that Harry Redknapp can strengthen in the future. I think we can strengthen.
Going back to the game at the weekend, is there any players that you're particularly worried about? What about a resurgent Paul Scholes, or is it more the obvious threat of Wayne Rooney?
To be honest with you, it's a bit ironic, but I think Berbatov, if he does start or if he does play, I think he's got a few things to settle, especially with Spurs fans. So we'll get to see him. I know he's had his back, basically, with the team there. But I think because when he was at Spurs, he was absolutely fantastic. And the thing is with Berbatov, he should be playing with a ring. He's basically the front man. When he was at Spurs, he had Keane behind him, and basically Keane was feeding him the ball continuously. And it was just left to go to a bit of magic, and put him back in there. But United was so much more last with him. But I think on Saturday, I think he's got something to do.
It certainly has to a lot of people. We ask everybody this question who comes on the show. If you could have any United player, who would it be? Obviously, money is no object, but you're not allowed Wayne Rooney because everybody actually chooses him. So anybody else apart from Wayne?
If it was any player, I think I'd pick the two, definitely. One of them, I'd welcome Michael Carrick back to our main definitely. I think his form's dropped recently, which is a bit of a shame. And I also don't think that he's ever replaced him. I mean, he's just in front of our back four. He wasn't a defensive midfield for Ireland, so he didn't jump into tackles. He would break up the play and then sprint some lovely passes onto the remaining players. So I definitely have impact. And if Owen Hargreaves is allowed to be rested up, and we've heard some rumours that he might be allowed to, I think he would be a great addition because we need someone like him definitely in the centre of the rest.
Excellent stuff. Two interesting choices there indeed. And well, before we let you go, James, how do you reckon the game will pan out? Obviously, you're on top form. We've had a little bit of a blip, obviously, came back against City on Saturday. Do you think it'll be high scoring, or do you think it'll be a tense affair, given that both teams really need to win to keep their respective ambitions alive?
I'm not too sure. First, I was siding with the fact that it could be high scoring, but then before I saw the Manchester derby. I think it's going to be tight. I think what will happen in the first 25 minutes, Tottenham will, what they've not done this season is come at you, especially away from home, we've not done that. But I think more for us to lose than you. I hate to say this, but I think Chelsea will win the championship unless they majorly slip up. And so I think there's more for us to gain from winning. So after 25 minutes, if there are no goals, then I think it's just a safe strategy affair. And to be honest with you, I think be a wonderful.
Oh, I don't know if I'd like a draw. I don't know. I think it'll be a good game. I think we've got two good sides there, two attacking sides as well. So I think it'll be quite an entertaining game, especially for 3 points that'll be needed by both. But James, it's been a pleasure having you on the RedCaffeine.net podcast. And well, with my fingers crossed, I do wish you luck at the weekend, and I hope your season goes well from here on in.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure. And wish you guys the best, obviously, not on Saturday. Okay, thanks very much.
Well, that's the views of our opposition fan. Dan, well, Tottenham at home on Saturday. We do win, It's the chance to move above Chelsea and, well, the chance to really put pressure on them, because they're really going to have to get a result, won't they, if we go above them, 2 points clear of them. It's pressure back on Ancelotti.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, obviously being at Old Trafford, I think it's a big advantage for us. The fans will be well up for this game, knowing how important it is. And I think that, you know, we should be able to beat Tottenham. Unfortunately, though, I do think that it'll be a tough game. Tottenham in great form at the moment, obviously beating Arsenal and beating Chelsea as well. So you say they can't beat us. Harry will have them fired up, prove to the, you know, the rest of England that they can do it every week, you know, week in, week out. So hopefully we'll grab the points and obviously put pressure on Chelsea, like you say.
Yeah, like Dan says there, Dov. I mean, there's probably not a harder game at the moment, is there, than Tottenham? I mean, Chelsea losing at the moment, Arsenal as well. So you'd probably pick out Tottenham as the team you wouldn't want to play at the moment, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would agree. I think they're in absolutely fantastic form. They've really, against Arsenal and Chelsea, they've tore them both apart. Like, especially Chelsea. I mean, they should have had like five or six in that game. But they only came away with a 2-1 victory in both games, which is, it's interesting, because obviously they're creating the chances, but they're not finishing them. So obviously if we can get a bit of luck on our side, and if they do manage to produce performances like they have done recently, then not put the chances away. I mean, we've obviously got the talent in the forward line to sort of punish them for that. But it wouldn't be a podcast if we didn't mention the great man himself, the Bulgarian Dimitar Berbatov, obviously playing against his old club as well. So he'll be looking to still prove a few doubters wrong and obviously put one out over his old team as well.
Quick prediction then, guys, before we sign off. Dan, how do you think it's going to go?
We're going to win 4-0. Get that goal difference right. If we can stop Gareth Bale, I think we've got a good chance. He's obviously in great form. Stop the ball getting to him and stop him breaking down our right hand side, and I think we'll be fine.
Just quickly, I mean, would you play Gary Neville? Obviously the pace of Bale could be a problem, but then the same could be said about Bellamy, and he coped really well with that, so probably not going to change it around, is he?
I think it might be time for Raphael to come in for a game. Obviously he's not played since the Bayern match, so maybe it's a good time to bring him in, but I don't know, really. Do you go with the experience of Neville having played a good game on Saturday, or do you go with someone a bit younger? We're at home, which means we should be, you know, looking to attack more, which is why I would go with Raphael. But I'd certainly understand if he played Gary Neville.
Well then, Dov, how's the game going to go?
I think it'll be a really entertaining open game, because I think both teams have got a lot to play for and a lot to lose. I mean, whoever looked like, if we lose this, then again, it's the title race is over for us. And obviously, if Spurs lose this, then, well, City could overtake them in fourth place, and it's a massive game for both teams. And I can honestly see it being a draw. There's too much riding on it for us to go out and get a magnificent 4-0 win, like Dan says. I think it's going to be an open game, but a tense game at the same time, but entertaining as well.
Good stuff. Well, that is just about the end of the podcast for this week. Do make sure you sign up to the Facebook group. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net. And it's also worth mentioning that we've been put up for, or suggested for, an award on the EPL Talk website for the best Premier League podcast, I believe it is. So go on there and vote for us if you fancy doing that. We really appreciate your support in that. And that just leaves us to say thanks a lot for listening this week, and we'll see you again next week.